Hello and welcome to the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, Week 11 Injury Report Edition. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and we are here to go through every single fantasy-relevant injury ahead of Sunday with some DFS and prop bet chatter along the way. Joining me, as always, on this wonderful Friday afternoon, PFF analyst Nick Botiford. Nick, what's going on, man? Great day to be great.
It is, dude. I'm excited for this one. Let's get into it.
Let's get at it. And with that, we're going to go position by position, ripping through all these injuries, hopefully about 30, 40 minutes, and then get to the rest of the show. So Bills quarterback Josh Allen not playing in a bunch of snow that likely would have had Devin Singletary unable to even see. He is not listed on the injury report with that handy-dandy right elbow injury. So Browns defense, 31st-ranked defensive scoring and EPA allowed per play. I am very upset, Nick, that my bookie had to cancel my over bet when I smartly immediately heard the news, went to go pound that 41 point over, but you know, I get it. Book's going to do their thing. Apparently DraftKings is honoring the over unders for those guys. So, hey, one of our sponsors we've always been reading off on here. Appreciate you guys over at DraftKings. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson officially listed as questionable with the illness. I do not know, Nick, another quarterback that gets sick more than Lamar Jackson. The good news is that head coach John Harbaugh already confirmed that Jackson will start Sunday against the Panthers. So haven't seen a ton of booms from Lamar lately. I mean, hasn't finished higher than the fantasy QB 10 since week 3. But if you guys check out my mismatch manifesto, always on PFF.com on Friday. If you're not the reading type, I tweet out the charts on Thursday. One of the best matchups of the week against this Panthers defense in terms of combined yards before contact per carry. So wouldn't be surprised if Lamar, maybe even one of these running backs, CC foreshadowing one of Nick's DFS picks, can't get going in a big way in this spot. Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford not listed with a concussion, and hey, this is PFF's 32nd ranked offensive line after all, so even though Stafford is back, not expecting too much from this passing game. I mean, this dude has even thrown multiple touchdowns in a game since week 2. His fewest adjusted yards per attempt since his rookie season, man. What a fall from grace for this entire Rams offense. Do not start anybody involved from the group if you do not have to. And the big one to talk about here, Nick, is going to go to the Arizona Cardinals playing on Monday night against the 49ers in Mexico City. So it looks like that Cliff Kingsbury is going to Cliff Kingsbury on us and not actually let us know if Kyler is going to be starting or not until Monday. Don't have the official designation just yet. That will come on Saturday, but Cliff has already called Kyler the dreaded game time decision. Colt McCoy also banged up with a knee injury, but I tend to think he'll have the better chance of getting out there. Nightmare scenario if both guys are out, then we get Trace McSorley getting the start against Nick Bosa and company on Monday night. So Nick, again, with Kyler, he was being called a game time decision last week. We've already kind of got word that they don't really want to force him back into action. I think that's an organizational belief after he did play through the pain in 2020 and it did not go well at all. So we kind of saw this last year where they really did take their time getting him back out there. Only when he was truly 100% was he allowed to get going. So do you have any lean on Kyler playing? I'm expecting him not to. I would love to hear something before Sunday, but because it's so, like, to me it's 50-50 best case, and because it's Monday night, there's a good chance you won't have Jimmy Garoppolo to pivot to. Thoughts on the Kyler situation?
So the data suggests that he will sit. Quarterbacks miss an average of 1.8 games due to hamstring strains, and they see a pretty massive dip in fantasy production at 36.2% in their first game back. That's from Adam Hutchinson's injury index. So I don't think he'll play. I hope that he is able to get 100% and then just come back well above that that average dip.
Yeah, my best ball teams would appreciate it if Kyler would push through the pain, but good point. Yeah, I'm not expecting Kyler to play. Look, if you're like me and you're in some of these leagues where the group of, you know, streamer quarterbacks, it can actually get a little bit deep there in your 10 or 8-man leagues if you happen to have one or two of those. Like, I do think it might be worth holding out hope, you know, if you can get Jimmy Garoppolo as the guy to pivot to. But Colt McCoy against this front seven when he's not going to be healthy in his own right, that's pretty rough. So if you have to, if it's close at all, just go with the guys playing on Sunday. Final note here, Panthers quarterback PJ Walker out with an ankle injury, the latest Panthers quarterback to suffer a high ankle sprain. So we'll be Baker Mayfield under center in Baltimore. Not expecting that to go too well. I will say Baker played his best football of the season last time we saw him in the second half of that Panthers week 9 loss to the Bengals. But again, just tough to really expect too much of anything out of this offense. Moving right on to running back, Steelers running back Najee Harris, not listed with that knee injury, although Mike Tomlin earlier in the week did say that Najee could be limited. So we're still working as the clear lead back ahead of Jalen Warren after the bye. It was more of a 60-40 split though. A borderline RB2 this week. I'm ranking Najee as, whereas Jalen Warren, just someone that right now with this still true backup role, we can't trust as a standalone player, but my goodness, I don't think there's a better handcuff out there that is still available in more leagues than not. Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. This one is a little bit interesting, Nick, because Zeke said he expects to suit up. Mike McCarthy doubled down, said he is anticipated to play. I guess I'm only worried because he's still listed as questionable, and last week he was questionable, and Jerry Jones was saying he expected him to play. But I think it's fair to put more credence behind Zeke and McCarthy than it is, you know, forever optimist Jerry Jones out here. I do expect Zeke to play. Are you with me?
I think this one's really tough. Like, he supposedly suffered a grade 2 MCL sprain, and average missed time is just over 3 games. So I'm looking at him as like a total toss up for this one. But even if he is active, like I think I'm still just excitedly starting Pollard.
Yeah, I would have to rank Pollard ahead of Zeke at this point. The big thing that everyone's been kind of missing with Zeke, like, look, go back to that Eagles game two weeks before he got hurt. I think it was actually the week before he got hurt. He actually outperformed Pollard in that game, was looking pretty spry out there. And then he got injured in that Lions game, you know, continued to play through the pain. So kudos to him for doing that. But the big problem with Zeke is we could live with the kind of the inefficient running, just not quite being as good as Pollard, but still getting the goal line stuff. If we had anything in the pass game, but there is nothing this year. There's 6 total receptions in 7 games this season. I mean, if you look in the past, man, last year Zeke caught 47 passes. Before that, 54, 52, 54, and 77. So again, Zeke, even though he's still playing ahead of Pollard, it really has swung more to Pollard with the overall usage even before this injury happened. So if we're not giving Zeke the benefit of a bunch of these checkdowns either, I do think we have to actually rank Pollard ahead of Zeke. That said, Pollard will be more of a mid-tier, you know, RB2 as opposed to that locked-in top 5 play that he's been the last few weeks. In Detroit, Jamal Williams not listed. He was, you know, not able to practice on Wednesday with an illness. Good to go the rest of the week. And then we have DeAndre Swift practicing full all week with the ankle and shoulder injuries. But as we know, he is still banged up. So 2 of the last 3 weeks, Nick, Swift has not been listed on the final injury report. And he's gotten full practices in to end the week. And yet he hasn't gone out there and actually gotten a big size role. They seem to be more than happy allowing Justin Jackson to continue to make this a 3-back committee. I mean, Craig Reynolds is out of it and it still just didn't even matter last week. So I caved at the end of last week. We talked about it. When he got that full practice and the no designation, it seemed good. But at this point, Nick, I'm standing strong. I need to see it before I'm treating DeAndre so there's anything more than an RB3. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. The designation thing is so aggravating because the NFL changed their rules for what they do and don't like list on the report, even when guys are injured. Yeah, RB3 is fair. I'll probably keep him in the low end RB2 ranks just because of the upside, but it's what you're saying is fair.
It's one of those things too, where if you do have him at the bottom of your top 24 because of the buys and because some of the other injuries, that's fine. Not someone that like needs to be shoved in the starting lineup. So by any stretch of the imagination, only thing I know with Jamal Williams, guys, 15 plus carries in all but one of his last 7 games. This has been a Giants defense that we've seen Drake, ETM, Pollard, McCaffrey, and almost Damian Pierce go for over 100 rushing yards against. Bears running back David Montgomery, good to go. Had that personal issue that kept him out of practice on Wednesday, not listed on the final injury report. Guys, this is someone that should be forced into fantasy lineups of most shapes and sizes because one Khalil Herbert out for the foreseeable future with that hip injury that landed him on IR. So pretty good matchup here, man. Falcons defense has allowed top 10 finishes to Deontay Foreman, 2 of them actually, Austin Eckler, Joe Mixon had an RB11 finish. So yes, Justin Fields, we've talked about this plenty of times on the podcast. Guys, like Fields, Hurts, Josh Allen, you know, all the dual threat quarterbacks don't always produce the most fantasy friendly running backs because they're scrambling instead of checking down and they factor into that equation near the goal line. But Justin Fields, while he does that, the Bears run the ball so damn much that doesn't really matter. Bears running backs actually have the 4th most carries in the NFL through 10 weeks of action. So you take Herbert out of that, and now all of a sudden we're looking at Montgomery getting 20 plus touches in an offense that all of a sudden is showing us some signs of scoring upside. So I do have Montgomery as a top 15 option out to position this week. I'm pulling up my handy dandy ranking so you guys can find on the PFF app and over at pff.com. And yeah, ahead of James Conner, ahead of Deontay Foreman, ahead of Miles Sanders, Jamal Williams. These are guys that, other than Connor, who I just think there's more of a matchup problem and not having Kyler there potentially, but Foreman, Sanders, Williams, even Pacheco, they at least have one other party in their backfield. Right now, Montgomery sure looks like he'll have none. Interesting one here, Nick. Ravens running back Gus Edwards questionable with the hamstring injury. Over the bye, John Harbaugh did say that the plan is for Gus to play. I did not see him, though, call Gus a game-time decision like Mark Andrews, so might have missed that. Again, you know, trying to get through every single one of these injury reports in a small period of time on Fridays, but it doesn't look great for Mark Andrews with that game-time decision call. I'm a little more confident in Gus Edwards being out there. So that said, man, we've seen this. Regardless of who's active in Baltimore, they're going to use 2 to 3 running backs each and every week. So even if Gus is active, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him and Kenyon Drake end up having a similar amount of carries. What's your read on the situation right now? Because it's a damn good matchup against the league's sixth worst defense in PPR points per game allowed to opposing running backs.
Yeah, Gus, I think he'll be super hard to trust just because of the nature of the injury and just trying to sift through what the Ravens do with their injuries. We'll talk about Kenyon Drake. I'm high on him this week. As for Mark Andrews, though, were you saying that he's going to be a game time decision? That seems like gamesmanship to me because he was a full participant in practice today.
Okay, that's good. But yeah, they did give him that actual dreaded game time decision call. But that Baltimore game's at 1 o'clock, though, so I don't really care as much. We'll find out before the game start, and it'll be a great day to be great. We're done with the 9:30, you know, bullshit over there in Europe. I'm happy the fans, you know, it was fun. I enjoy listening to Germany crowd getting wild too, but we are back on America time. Got it, love that. Bengals running back Chris Evans, questionable with a knee injury. It's only notable because I've been talking about Samaje Perine being one of those better handcuffs to go get if you have the room to, because guess what? One injury to Joe Mixon, and it did seem like Perine was going to be really set up. And while I still do believe that, this could make it closer to a 60-40, 50-50 split. We didn't know how serious Evans' injury was. The fact he's been practicing in a limited fashion and he's questionable goes to show you that it's not overly serious. Another backup running back that just has some minor ramifications, Colts running back Deion Jackson, not listed with that knee injury. So Jonathan Taylor last week kind of lost in, you know, how angry everyone was about Christian McCaffrey's role. Was the reality that Taylor really did get the old CMC role, 93% snap rate. So maybe Deion Jackson does kind of take the Nyheim Hines role and Taylor goes back down to more of a 70, 80% back. But guess what? You're starting him either way. I think it's more of just a question of what's Taylor's actual sky high ceiling. But Nick, this matchup in particular, man, just a little bit with some of our DFS takes, but I love the idea of paying up to Taylor and even like Dalvin Cook this week. I view these guys very similarly. Most of the value on DraftKings is in the 6 to 7K range. Really, I think Josh Jacobs like 7,500, where you see most of that ownership drop off. And sure, if he can get all the way up to Saquon, that's great. But with the Colts home 7-point dogs against an Eagles defense that is dead last in EPA allowed per run play, they lost, you know, just behemoth Jordan Davis in the middle a couple weeks ago, and after that, the Texans went for 168 rushing yards. The Commanders went for 152 with nobody, I believe, as good as Jonathan Taylor, with all due respect to our guy, Damian Pierce. So on the other side with Dalvin Cook, you know, we have a situation with the Cowboys. Yes, they've been a great defense overall, but as we've seen, Leonard Fournette and more recently Aaron Jones have been able to pop off big time with 120 plus rushing yards in their own right. So Jonathan Taylor, Nick, is he tickling your pickle for a GPP RB play?
yes, I think GPP is very interesting. I think we're going to learn a lot with the Eagles having just signed Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh. You know, can they plug the holes? I like the dice roll. Yeah. I like the dice roll.
That is true. I mean, God, leave it to the Eagles to address every single possible concern rather quickly. Great organization these days. Chiefs running back Jerick McKinnon not listed with those hamstring and shoulder injuries. Just remember, guys, we take Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of this backfield. Yes, that's great news for Isaiah Pacheco, but there's still two running backs there. The other one, Jerick McKinnon, continues to have that every down pass game role pretty much. So every down pass game role. Good freaking sentence, Ian. But he's out there getting the majority of the targets. And when we look in this matchup, especially, I guess it is going to be the Sunday night game, so we don't have to worry about as much on the main slate. But RB needy teams out there. Jerick McKinnon without Juju, without Mecole Hardman. Yes, we're firing up Kadarius Toney all over the place. We'll talk about him in a little bit. But don't be surprised if McKinnon ends up being someone getting those 7 to 8 targets. Don't hate at all featuring him in showdowns. And again, if you're a needy team and you just need somebody out there in full PPR, you could do worse than McKinnon. Saints RB Mark Ingram continues to be out with a knee injury. Be a lot cooler if Andy Dalton could actually freaking throw Alvin Kamara the ball. But look, obviously you're starting Kamara regardless, so it's kind of a moot point. Commanders running back J.D. McKissic out with a neck injury. So with that, Brian Robinson continues to split things with Antonio Gibson. I don't know why Brian Robinson continues to work so far ahead of Gibson on the ground, but guess what? He is, and they're facing the freaking Texans. So this is a great spot for Robinson. Another guy I really like on DraftKings, going pretty much under the radar just at 5.3K. The Texans have had 9 games this year. They've allowed the overall RB1 or RB2 on 5 separate occasions. So really is a defense that I don't think that they're going to be able to stop. What's going on here in Washington? Let's go B-Rob and Gibson to a lesser extent. And finally, Raiders running backs Brandon Bolden, Amir Abdullah, good to go, but that's okay. Josh Jacobs still very much a beast. All right, guys, before we get going on to wide receiver, I want to give a quick shout out to some of our lovely sponsors out there. Of course, we got to pay the bills to keep this wonderful PFF Fantasy Football Podcast above ground. And with that, let's give some love to our friends over at Western and Southern. The PFF Fantasy Football Podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, I'm trying, plan to start a family. You'd like to think so. Wondering how to make your money grow? That sounds great. Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started now at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Also got to give a shout out to our friends over at DraftKings. Already complimented them for not, you know, turning off the over-unders for folks that were ahead of the game. That's not fair, because guess what, Nick? If you were someone that viewed the over-under on Monday, you saw the weather and you bet the under, guess what? Bets aren't getting canceled when that game gets moved to Detroit. So just one of those things where it's like, I think there's enough advantages with these sports books already. It's just a shame when they can't give out, you know, just a little bit extra help. So I am very excited, if you guys can't tell, for gambling to be legalized in the fine state of Ohio here before too long. And I cannot wait to take plenty of my business over to DraftKings. One of the really cool features is that right now, new customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, and they'll get $150 in free bets if they do. And check this out. Right now, everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay, and combine multiple bets like which team will win, player props, point totals, and more. The more legs you add, the bigger the boost, the bigger your shot to win big. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code PFF. Place a $5 bet on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code PFF. All right, guys, let's move on to wide receiver here. So first, there are some, you know, IR moves we got to talk about in the next two sections. Most notably, number one fantasy wide receiver, reigning fantasy MVP, Cooper Kupp, with that high ankle sprain, is on IR, expecting to miss at least the next 4 weeks. Certainly wouldn't be surprising if he is out for the rest of the season. So look, Allen Robinson has 2 touchdowns this season, has yet to get 65 yards in a game. Van Jefferson, it took until his third game back to catch a pass. Bennett Skowronek has turned his last 10 targets into 24 scoreless yards. Nick, because of this injury, Tyler Higbee, like, they now actually need him a little bit more as a wide receiver. We saw that last week. I have him back in the tight end one range. Other than Tyler Higbee, do you have faith in anyone in this offense? I think I have A-Rob as like my wide receiver 31 or something. So, okay, it's not the worst play, but nobody needs to be started by any stretch.
No, nobody here needs to be started.
Screw them. All right, you know, just like I want them to be better, not them personally. You guys can get that. With the Cardinals, good news here, actually. Wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins wasn't called a game time decision. Thank you, Cliff. Was that so hard? Actually told us that his hamstring issue is more of a maintenance deal, and he clarified that it's not nearly the issue it was last year. So continue to fire up DeAndre Hopkins as a rock solid upside wide receiver one. The bigger question, Nick, is if Marquise Brown is going to be out there. So our guy Mogul, always bringing a positive vibe to the PFF Fantasy Pods. Appreciate you, my man. He did note that Hollywood looks like he'll play. Saw him moving well in practice. So it's one of these things where we don't know until Monday night. So if Marquise does get activated off IR tomorrow, that is going to tell us if he's going to be out there or not, because they wouldn't activate him and then make him, you know, inactive and just go through that whole process. Might as well just leave him on there for another week. So if Marquise Brown is back, the most ideal situation, Nick, would be he just moves AJ Green and Robbie Anderson straight to the bench, and we get a full game of Hopkins, Hollywood, and Rondale Moore. I am not 100% confident that's going to happen, though. We did see this happen last year where AJ Green and Antoine Wesley, unfortunately, kept having that full-time role, and Rondale Moore was relegated to more of a gadget play. So Rondale playing a lot better this year than he did last year, just to be quite frank with it. I want to assume rational coaching here, Nick, but as we know in Arizona, it's not always the easiest thing to do. How concerned are you about Marquise Brown's return for Rondale Moore and, to a lesser extent, DeAndre Hopkins?
I'm not worried about DeAndre Hopkins. I was filtering through data the other day and thought for a second that Hopkins, like 45 targets since he's come back, 47, was like an error, because he's just been a target vacuum. I'm not worried about Hopkins at all. And Rondale, I think he's been double digits in three of the last 4 weeks. Like he's doing a really good job. Targets, you know, targets are earned. Wide receivers in their initial game back from non-specific foot injuries, it's not bad. It's not like worst case scenario, but it can take them a little while to get going again. So I think we start Hopkins and Rondale just sort of as we normally would, and not really overthink it. You know, another factor here is that Zach Ertz is out of the lineup. So like Hollywood could just come in and just kind of take that role, and that target role, and nothing might change, or I don't think anything will change for the other wide receivers.
We have seen guys in this offense like Robbie, even James Conner a little bit play, but under a little bit of a pitch count. So I'm not trusting Marquise Brown this week. It's also a really tough matchup against the 49ers, likely with your backup quarterback out there that we've seen be far more willing to just check the ball down to Hopkins and Rondale than necessarily air it out to Hollywood. So very good that Marquise Brown is like back this soon. I don't know. It sounded like, I think the first actual diagnosis was that it was going to be a season ending issue. So very good news there. I am going to continue to treat Rondale as a low-end wide receiver too, regardless of Marquise's overall status. So good point there, Nick. Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase out for another week with a hip injury. Continue to fire up T. Higgins and mostly Tyler Boyd in all your fantasy lineups. Also, don't be surprised if Hayden Hurst gets a little bit healthier coming off that bye, gets a little top 10 treatment himself. Raiders wide receiver Davante Adams officially questionable with an abdomen injury. I'm tentatively expecting him to play because he practiced in a limited fashion all week. One hell of a matchup here, though. I think he's going to get shadow coverage from Patrick Surtain, PFF's highest graded cornerback in overall defensive grade among 132 qualified players at the position. So look, Adams went for like 90 yards and caught 8 passes when he got shadowed by Surtain earlier this season, but it's going to make life tougher. And should he bench Adams? Of course freaking not. But hey, I'm just saying, it's going to be fun. Go out there, let's watch some good football and tournaments on DraftKings. That's where maybe you consider this a little bit more and take your foot off the gas. But always remember, matchups, tiebreaker, not a rule of thumb. Start your studs. Eagles wide receivers A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith good to go, playing through those respective ankle and knee injuries. Remember, Dallas Goedert is out of the picture with that shoulder issue, so it would make a lot of sense if A.J.B. and Devontae have a little bit higher of a target floor. Also, Nick, it does seem like Stephon Gilmore should be tracking A.J. Brown all over the field. He's usually shadowed throughout the year. Now, he didn't against Davante Adams every snap last week. We obviously saw high leverage situations at the end. He got another game-winning PBU. Dude's having a hell of a season. But I do wonder, man, could this be the week we really get back to seeing that Devontae Smith breakout going on, maybe feasting against the lesser corners in that Indianapolis defense? Then again, the Colts have been pretty damn good overall this year against wide receivers. How are you feeling about this matchup, Nick? Because I do, one of my picks on the Roto Grinder show was the Colts +7, just because this is a banged up Eagles offense, and we've already talked about some of their deficiencies on run defense. So if styles make fights here, man, I do think the Colts offense should be a little bit better than we'd expect against this Eagles defense. And again, if we're looking at what the Eagles can do offensively, pretty much everyone is banged up in their passing game right now, and they're facing a pretty damn good pass defense.
Yeah. Colts +7 sounds pretty reasonable to me. Isaiah Rodgers is not he's a pretty decent corner. Kenny Moore he's beatable. If Devontae Smith gets some more time on the interior with Goddard out, I think that would be really smart. But there are, I thought about writing up a couple players this matchup, actually did write up Paris Campbell. I think that this one offers a lot of interesting questions that we kind of get to figure out. There's a lot of moving parts here.
Absolutely. Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson not listed with this toe injury. The only fun kind of point about this is that Trayvon Diggs got asked to name his top five wide receivers in the league this week and curiously left off one, Justin Jefferson. Now, the list wasn't as egregious as people were making it out to be. He had his brother, Stephon Diggs, at number one, Davante Adams, number two, Tyreek Hill, number three, Ja'Marr Chase, number four, which I think everyone can pretty much agree with is fair. The only reach was, yeah, his teammate CeeDee Lamb actually going in there and being number five. So yeah, he took his teammate over Justin Jefferson, but I didn't think it was the most absurd or the most slanderous thing out there. Yeah, guys, it is what it is there. But next up, Chiefs wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster out with a concussion. Mecole Hardman on IR with that abdomen injury. Yes, that's right. That's Kadarius Toney's music you are hearing, ladies and mostly gentlemen. It is time. Unleash the beast. We just got to start to question Olave or Kadarius Toney this week. And while I still just barely lean Chris Olave, I legitimately have Kadarius Toney as my wide receiver 13 on the week. So it's a hell of a problem to have out there. And I think it's close enough that if you want to go with Toney, you should feel just fine doing that. So it's just one of those things, man, where all we have left, MVS, Justin Watson, Sky Moore, and the top-ranked scoring offense, we've already seen them increasing Tony's usage. We've heard Patrick Mahomes say himself that he'll continue to get more and more run out there in the offense. Travis Kelce every other day just keeps remarking to someone that he can't believe that Kadarius Toney ever found a way out of New York. Like, what's the trap here, Nick? What are we missing? Because Kadarius Toney so far looks fantastic in a Chiefs uniform, and hell, he's been pretty good with the football too.
That is a phenomenal start sit question to have. My answer to that is just start them both. Why would it be between that and not? I'd try to start them both there. I have Toney as a high end wide receiver too. And this was earlier in the week waiting on some injuries to pan out. Just seeing how he responded to a moderate sized workload. He probably deserves to just be in the wide receiver one conversation right now.
It's wild. Wild times to be alive. Gotta love it. All those weeks, guys, all those weeks we had Toney sitting on our bench with the fake hamstring injury, wondering if it was worth it. We made it, hopefully. Fingers crossed, knock on wood. Let's go, Kadarius Toney. Love the freaking memes of him, you know, saying Patrick Mahomes and just getting the laser eyes treatment on Twitter. Fun times being had by all these Kadarius Toney managers. All right, Bills. All right, Angel's back. He also has Tyler Boyd. Jeez, man. Three of my top 14 wide receivers. Pick your fighter. They're all awesome choices. Appreciate you tuning in though, Angel. Bills wide receiver Isaiah McKenzie, not listed. He had some, you know, worrying illness earlier in the week, but he is good to go. Interesting, man. I think Isaiah McKenzie is low-key a pretty good wide receiver three this week. He ran around 80% of Josh Allen's dropbacks last week. He's been distancing himself from Khalil Shakir now ever since that brutal game he had against the Chiefs quite some time ago. So with McKenzie getting the feast on a Browns defense that's 31st in scoring and EPA allowed per play, and oh, hey, guess what? First-round pick and slot corner Greg Newsom ruled out with the concussion that he just suffered on Friday. So I don't like McKenzie's over on 25.5 receiving yards. I love it, Nick, and don't underestimate what he can do as a pure fantasy piece as well. With the Giants, Wandale Robinson questionable with the hamstring, got downgraded on Thursday. It sounds like he still has a chance to play, but look, we already had enough volume concerns here. Only wide receiver that is fantasy viable this week is going to be Darius Slayton, who Nick very rightfully called out as a nice breakout play last week. Great job by you, Nick. With the Houston Texans, Brandon Cooks and Nico Collins were limited earlier in the week, but they are not listed on the final injury report. Just realize, guys, this is an offense implied to score fewer than 19 points. I mean, other than Damian Pierce, none of these guys need to be in your lineups. With the Denver Broncos, Jerry Jeudy out with an ankle. KJ Hamler out with a hamstring injury. And oh, hey, we got Kendall Hinton, if that's not enough. Also questionable here. Actually, not questionable. Yes, he is questionable. My bad. I got my editors freaking messing with my sheet as I'm trying to talk during the podcast, but we'll roll with the punches here, Nick. Kendall Hinton, questionable with the shoulder injury. All that to say, Cortland Sutton is set up for all sorts of workload. I will say, Nick, I do my rankings on Tuesday night, and I just got sad ranking Cortland Sutton because I had to literally get to like wide receiver 18, wide receiver 19 before I felt comfortable putting the guy there. And like, if he just would have told us this scenario a couple months ago in August, we'd be talking about him being a top 10 option at the position, if not top five, without Jeudy, without Hamler, without anybody there. Absolute madness. So where do you have Sutton this week? Because right now, I'm at wide receiver 19 ahead of fellow guys in fairly brutal passing games like Deontay Johnson, like DJ Moore, like Brandon Cooks, and among other guys. But I would still start guys like Gabriel Davis, Amari Cooper, even Devontae Smith ahead of Courtland Sutton this week. How do you feel?
Yeah, I've got him as the wide receiver 22 right now. And I'm going to do updates this afternoon. He might end up as a high-end wide receiver 3.
Miguel, I would go with Gabriel Davis over George Pickens and Paris Campbell in that start sit. Good guys to have, though. I really do think Pickens, we're going to see some big days here potentially this week against an overrated, in my opinion, Bengals secondary. Paris Campbell, 3 top 12 finishes, last 3 games with Matt Ryan under center. Just a little more worried about that Eagles game. Again, I think it can be close, but I think their path to success is going to be more so on the ground than through the air. What's up, Nick?
He's lining up against a backup slot corner, Josiah Scott. I wrote him up in the wide receiver cornerback matchup. I like him a lot this week.
Okay, that's fine, but we're still taking Gabe Davis over him. That's
yes,
the only thing.
Yes, sir. Yeah, yes,
that's
sir.
All. But Paris Campbell certainly on the up and up, more than worthy of wide receiver 3 consideration. With the Chargers, another freaking primetime game time decision. If I was commissioner of the NFL, everybody, I would make primetime game time decisions illegal. But until then, we're going to have to continue to deal with it. So Chargers wide receiver Keenan Allen is questionable with the hamstring, and Brandon Staley called him a game time decision. Mike Williams also questionable, but he came out and said that he expects to play. So that's awesome. Immediately back on the wide receiver 2 map, feeling good against the Chiefs secondary that has allowed the 5th most PPR points per game to opposing wide receivers this season. But again, they play on Sunday night. So no, you can't trust Keenan Allen. I mean, you'd have to have like a pretty funky start sit thing. I mean, I would start Kadarius Toney over Keenan Allen straight up, even if we find out he's going to be back there. So man, if it's like Keenan, like an MVS or something, then okay, you can probably ride it out. If it's Keenan, and I mean, hell, I'd probably start Brandon Ayuk over Keenan. I'd start Rondale Moore probably over Keenan. That'd be a tough one. Yeah, still?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. It's just unfortunate we got to go through all this with Keenan. Hopefully he gets healthy sooner rather than later. DeAndre Carter is not listed, but yeah, with that, with Carter and Josh Palmer, guys, even with only Mike Williams coming back, it's going to be pretty severe downgrades for both guys. All right, we can rip through some of these now. Patriots wide receiver Devontae Parker, questionable with a knee. We only care about Jacoby Myers anyway. Commanders wide receiver Curtis Samuel, good to go with that shin injury. Wide receiver 26, 37, 13, and 64 finishes in 4 games with Heinicke under center. Rock solid wide receiver 3. Saints wide receiver Jarvis Landry, not listed, working as the offense's number 2 wide receiver, and an offense that has scored 23 points in their last 8 quarters. Not great. Lions wide receiver Josh Reynolds looks to be on the wrong side of questionable, downgraded to a DMP on Friday. Khalif Raymond, Tom Kennedy on the outside, Sun God in the slot, who is the only one we really care about here. Jets wide receiver Corey Davis out with a knee injury. Why does this matter, Ian? Because believe it or not, when we did get the first 3 weeks of Zach Wilson being back under center, Corey Davis was leading this offense in receiving yards. Without him in the picture, Garrett Wilson, we can feel much better about going back to as a talent-based wide receiver 3. Don't forget before the bye, 115 yards and 92 yards on 8 catches before heading to that bye. Maybe the Elijah Moore slot experiment, you know, completely changes things, but I will believe it when I see it there. And finally, Bears wide receiver N'Keal Harry ruled out with an illness. Maybe now Chase Claypool will like actually get a chance to play a little bit. They traded a 2nd-round pick for their wide receiver 5 at the moment. I know it's early. I know he's learning a playbook, but I don't know, guys. We see TJ Hawkinson go to Minnesota and just immediately playing 90% plus snaps. Kind of wish they could figure that out. In the meantime, Darnell Mooney, a soft wide receiver 3, and that is it for wide receiver. At tight end, another one of those damn game time decisions, Nick. At least this one is for a 1 o'clock game. It's going to be Mark Andrews with that knee and shoulder issue. So look, if Andrews is healthy enough to suit up, we are firing him up as a top 2 option at the position, as always. If not, Isaiah Likely becomes interesting. So I think it's a tier here, Nick, where it's Kelsey, like just looking at the overall rankings, Kelsey, Kittle, and Hawkinson, I think are pretty deserving of the top 3 spots. Dalton Schultz, 4. If you even want to put him in that top tier, okay. But after that, where we have Everett, Likely, Freiermuth, Pitts, even like Komet, if you wanted to scramble those guys, rank them in any order you want, I probably wouldn't overly disagree with it. I personally have it Schultz number 4, Everett 5, Isaiah Likely 6, and then Freiermuth and Pitts. How do you feel about Isaiah Likely if Mark Andrews is ruled out?
The only name that was different in our grouping there was just I have Pat Freiermuth just a little bit below, but like all of those names are my top eight. So okay. We're in lockstep.
Same page. Good to hear. Good news is Browns tight end David Njoku is feasibly back. He is listed as questionable, but says he will be playing through that tag. Now, it would make sense if he's not playing his usual 90% plus snap role, but just to see him back from this ankle injury, very good news moving forward. Deshaun Watson back in the fold starting in week 13, and you look at what Njoku was able to do during his past five games with Jacoby under center, tight end 2, 11, 6, 17, and 5. This could be a legit top five tight end down the stretch with Deshaun Watson, so if you guys see David Njoku out there on the waiver wire, don't love starting him this week, but also someone that I think when I update my rankings could feasibly be in the top 15, 16. Definitely someone that we're going to be feeling better about down the road once we're for sure positive he's getting that big time role. I think a good start sit question, Nick, would be like, how would you rank David Njoku versus someone like Foster Moreau or Greg Dulcich, who were more confident in their role this week, but we know Njoku has the higher best case upside.
I would go Dulcich, Njoku, and then, And then Foster Moreau.
Okay. Right behind Moreau in my ranks, I have Trey McBride, who, of course, has taken over for Zach Ertz, who just suffered a season-ending knee injury. Here's the thing with Trey McBride. If we get the same role that we had last week, which was legit every down 91% snaps, he's going to be up in the top 10 almost immediately. This is a talented receiver that we're calling a tight end, which is always a fun time. Not to dismiss what McBride can do as a blocker, more so complimenting his just receiving ability. But the thing is, Max Williams was not active for that game. He is likely going to be elevated from the practice squad on Saturday. So again, I would like to start some of these other guys that we're more sure of with the role. Dulcich, Higby, Hayden Hurst, Komet, even David Njoku. I'm starting them ahead of Trey McBride this week. Moving forward, though, could quickly become a weekly top 10 option. Much less certain about what's going on in Philadelphia with Dallas Goedert on IR with a shoulder injury. We should see Jack Stoll out there as the primary tight end. Whether that's going to be 50% of the snaps or 90% of the snaps remains to be seen. Do you have any feel on that one, Nick? Because my issue is it doesn't even look like Stoll has all that much, you know, upside. Our friends over at a Player Profiler comped him to Anthony Fasano, which, you know, didn't exactly get me pumped.
I opted for Grant Calcaterra. I keep wanting to call him Kyle Calcaterra. Grant Calcaterra. Yeah. Just because he is he had a better collegiate receiving profile. I'm not like pumped about him, but I think I added him in like one or two industry leagues, and I added Trey McBride everywhere I could. Just hold him and see what happens. And after 1 week, you can probably drop him.
Can you name the other tight end on the Eagles roster right now?
The other time, no, I'm stalling.
He played quarterback in college. Tyree Jackson. That's a fun one.
I would not have gotten it.
That could be a fun one, but yeah. And the story here, I do not think there's going to be a fantasy relevant tight end in Philly during Goddard's absence. Bears tight end Cole Kmet, good to go. He had that thigh injury earlier in the week, not listed on the final injury report. I would just say, people, like, he has 5 touchdowns over the past 3 weeks on 15 total targets. So it's one of those things where, hey, he's scoring. And as long as Justin Fields keeps on having a high passing touchdown rate, it's going to be fine. But man, this is still just such a low volume passing game. Nothing against Kmet. He's clearly shown he has a good ability to go find the end zone, but don't be surprised if it is going to be a bit boomer busty down the stretch. Good news, Gerald Everett, Chargers tight end, not listed with that groin injury, went for 6 catches, 71 yards against this very Chiefs defense back in week 2. I think he warrants top 6 treatment at the position. Final few notes, Giants tight end Daniel Bellinger out again with that eye injury. They're using a committee behind him, can't trust anyone. Colts tight end Jelani Woods is out with a shoulder injury. They're going to split up things with Kylan Granson and Mo Alie-Cox, so we can't really trust them. And finally, Commanders tight end. This one's interesting. Logan Thomas is not listed with a rib injury. He actually did run a route on 79% of Heineke's dropbacks last week, which is as elite as we could basically ask for. Usually it's that 80% threshold, 79%. Okay, we'll take it. And we got Armani Rogers out with a knee injury. Armani is kind of their other tight end that they are more willing to throw the ball to versus guys like John Bates. So, hey man, Washington going up against this Houston secondary, 30th ranked group and coverage grade. I mean, I think guys like, look, I would start Foster Moreau, Trey McBride, even probably like Tyler Conklin and stuff, among others, ahead of Logan Thomas. But I've heard worse ideas in DFS land. Do you have any feel here for Logan Thomas, Nick?
You basically just said it. I wouldn't start him in redraft. I'd consider him in GPP. But like that knee, we talked about that early in the season. I think he tore 3 different ligaments. Like,
he hasn't looked the same.
Yeah.
Damn. All right. Two other notes just real quick on defense. Steelers safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, somehow had the appendectomy like last Saturday. He's good to go. Already practicing in full, not listed, and he'll be back. So this is going to be the first time since, I believe, week one. That was when TJ Watt, I believe, originally got hurt, that the Steelers are going to have Watt and Fitzpatrick back fully healthy. So wouldn't be surprised at all. Not saying they're going to dominate the Bengals, but should at least be a more decent defense here moving forward. And we also have Texans cornerback Derek Stingley Jr., number 3 overall pick in the draft, out with a hamstring injury. So I had my shadow matchup column go up on Thursday, and I was well aware that Stingley was expected to shadow Terry McLaurin, and I couldn't have cared less, because you looked at the guys he's been facing this year. Corlin Sutton, Mike Williams went for over 100. Davante Adams did as well. I think A.J. Brown got held to like 59, but he even scored a touchdown in that matchup. So for me, looking at Terry McLaurin, who has just been eviscerating everyone that's tried to shadow him this year, I love Terry to begin with. I was upgrading him because of this matchup. So of course, when we lose this guy and now we get the backup in the equation, I'm not going to be fair in that. So again, Stingley, very, very bright future. He's being asked, though, to cover legit number one wide receivers. So that's why he's not even graded inside of PFF's top 100 cornerbacks this year in pure coverage grade. So, guys, can't miss prop of the week. We were able to come get home on the Dalton Schultz one. I'm trying to do a better job not screaming it at you, you know, 10 times during the podcast. But we'll aim for two or three here just to make sure you get it. Terry McLaurin over 59.5 receiving yards. And what's wild to me about this one is I expected to see the similar reasoning with Dalton Schultz last week, Nick, which was the quarterback change of one quarterback being way better for the receiver than the other one. This one, I can't even figure out why the line's so low. I think it should be 10 yards higher, because for the season, McLaurin is averaging 73.7 receiving yards per game. And with Heinicke under center, he's gone for 73, 113, 56, and 128. So again, 30th ranked secondary in PFF coverage grade, and they just lost their number one freaking cornerback. So what am I missing here, Nick? I get it. It could be an erratic Heinicke performance, and there are some other weapons here, but Terry McLaurin, man, 8th in the NFL in receiving yards, can't even get a prop at 60. That's a slap in the face, man.
Yeah, so we'll slap them right back. I wrote, I put Terry McLaurin as a wide receiver to target this week. I love it.
Great stuff. We will slap the shit out of them back. Before we get finished up here, Nick, let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Sleeper. Gotta do our Sleeper segment of the week. And our Sleeper of the week, I'm gonna go back to my guy, Isaiah McKenzie. And I would say those are my two favorite props I've managed to find digging around overall. So Isaiah McKenzie, again, just 25.5 receiving yards is his receiving prop. And I even think as a wide receiver 3 against the Browns defense that is without Greg Newsome. And guess what? They were pretty terrible even with Greg Newsome out there this year, specifically against the pass. So getting to move indoors, this potential shootout now. Isaiah McKenzie, number 3 wide receiver in the NFL's, I believe. Are the Bills still second ranked scoring? If they're not, they're top 5. Fantastic offense that we know is capable of putting up all sorts of yards at the drop of the hat. Isaiah McKenzie, my sleeper of the week. You got a sleeper of the week, Nick? I'm putting you on the spot here, but I don't know. Yeah. Anyone? Hey, who you got?
Yeah. We're going to go with Houston Texans slot receiver, Chris Moore.
Ooh.
Yep. Top 12 slot receiver in PFF slot receiving grade, targets per out run and yards per out run over the last 2 weeks. I think he's going to beat the hell out of Bobby McCain. the Washington slot coverage, they're on their, I think, 3rd or 4th guy this year. And yeah, I think Moore can get it done.
I believe Chris Moore actually made my sheesh column. Yeah, he was open for a 16-yard touchdown last week, but Davis Mills sailed it out the end zone. So, hey, Nick, we'll see. I was telling Dwayne on Sunday night when we were doing our game breakdowns, like, we're about to get into Nick's DFS article here, which you guys can find on pff.com every single Saturday now, where he goes over his 5 favorite plays. But, you know, you have the same thing this week. 4 of your plays last 2 weeks and this week as well. Like, I really agree with, I see where you're coming from and I'm with you, but over these past 2 weeks, you had Jeff Wilson and Darius Slayton, who I'll be honest, I thought you were wrong, man. I just did not see the upside for them. And my God, both guys scored. Both guys had, you know, actual big games with the yardage as well. Great calls by you, my friend. So with that, let's get to your DFS cheat sheet. Top 5 DFS plays of the week. Going to go through these. I'll get to a couple cash and tournament strategies, get a nice little 15-minute here rundown of the slate. So with that said, Nick, we're focusing on DraftKings, mostly here on the main slate, 1 p.m. and 4 o'clock. Now, let's talk about Kenyon Drake, Baltimore Ravens RB1. The one thing I really love about this play, in addition to some of the notes you have about just the matchup, is the fact that a lot of people still are on Deontay Foreman based on some of these big games that he's had. And hey, guess what? When they've been able to win two of those games by double-digit points, have this, you know, entertaining back-and-forth shootout with the Falcons that goes to overtime, it's been perfect game script for Deontay Foreman. He's a 12.5-point dog this week, but people aren't necessarily putting that as much into the equation as I think they should. So why not go to the other side of the field and take the fellow early down run heavy running back that actually has the game script we're looking for?
Yeah, so there are a lot of factors that make me like Kenyon Drake this week, who is not someone who I'm typically on board with. But Baltimore Ravens, 13-point home favorites against the Panthers. They've got a 27.25 points implied team total. As things stand, the Panthers defensive front, they're kind of all over the place, but they're a middling unit overall. Unfortunately, they are likely to be without starting defensive tackle Matt Ioannidis and rotational run defensive tackle Davin Nixon. So they're going to be a little bit weaker than they typically are. Game script is going to be in Kenyon Drake's favor. I've also got some weather report data in here. There's a great piece that I found by Scott Spratt from 2018 at PFF, where he talks about the effect that sub 30 degree weather has, as well as wind speed has on the game. Without getting too deep into this, basically the figures come together to project like a 5% dip in completion percentage for with the current forecast at Baltimore Stadium. Baltimore is a really smart team. I think that they're going to be aware of the difficulties they're going to face weather-wise, and so I think that they're going to give a little bit more to the run game even than they normally would because of that.
Quickly, Nick, on that weather front, I always love checking out Kevin Ross, NFL Weather Edge over at Roto-Grinders. And we do have two games in the yellow this week, which means you do have to consider downgrading those passing games. So yes, Panthers in Baltimore. His notes are saying it's breezy, especially early, sustained winds around 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. And that usually is that magic point that we can't expect some downgrades. The other matchup, Detroit against the Giants, where he notes similar to Baltimore, especially early going to be an issue, but the wind should be tapering off late. So fair to prioritize the run games in those games versus the passing attacks.
Cool. So when we get to Gus Edwards, I've included the volatility with hamstring injuries as it pertains to running backs in the article. They come with a 14.3% re-injury rate. They've got a 24.9% dip in fantasy production upon their initial return. That's, as always, props to Adam Hutchison. He has had 2 weeks to get right or 3 weeks to get right, but they tend to miss three games. So he's technically going to come back a little bit early. And I'm actually, what was his? So he went limited. And okay, limited again. So Gus Edwards is not fully healthy. Does that mean he won't play? We don't know. But given the current situation, I think that Kenyon Drake is going to have a decent sized workload here. The other thing is that Drake has kind of just been dominating the passing down work. He doesn't get a huge amount of passing game volume, but it is his to lose. And as a rusher, he's not running terribly well through contact, but he is being efficient on the ground. So things are all just kind of coming together here, I think, for potentially a multi touchdown outing from Kenyon Drake. The Panthers, so they are averaging 19 opponent rush attempts inside their own 5 per game, which is the second most in the NFL.
Wait, no. Is that like on the season?
That is, you can go check this out. This is per the PFF offensive line, defensive line matchup chart. And I was kind of shocked by that figure. Maybe I'll have to go double check that figure, but as it says in there, the raw total per game,
19 rush attempts inside the 5 per. We gotta get that fixed. Jesus Christ. All right.
We can take a look at it, but perhaps a more helpful data point, which I have in here, is their rush touchdown conversion rate allowed inside the 5 is at 47%, which is bottom 5 and also very believable. So I think Kenyon Drake can have a nice game here, but yeah, tell me what you think.
No, I think all that's fair, even with our potentially faulty inside the five rate aside. I think look, at the end of the day, it's a running back looking at potentially upwards of 15 to 20 touches inside of an offense at home, favored by 12.5. And one of the things you can check out in my Mismatch Manifesto article is the reality that the Ravens have one of the biggest advantages at the line of scrimmage of the entire week in terms of their combined yards before contact per carry. So really, only the Lions against the Giants and the Bills against the Browns are better positioned. And hey, Kenyon Drake not getting nearly as much attention as guys like Devin Singletary and even Jamal Williams on DraftKings. So cool with that call. Next up, you're going back to the well with the man that has four straight weeks as a top five fantasy quarterback, Justin freaking Fields, now all the way up to 7.6K on DraftKings this week, facing off against the Falcons in Atlanta. So we got that dome life in a week where we are having to deal with some of Mother Nature's bullshit. So looking at Fields, I think the one interesting thing amongst others that you bring up in the breakdown is the fact that he only has a 7.1% projected ownership rate, which you guys can find at PFF.com. And this really is something at quarterback that we see a lot, even the more chalky quarterbacks, which he's not necessarily this week, only fifth highest on the week in terms of projected ownership. But as much as, you know, getting off the chalky running back or wide receiver can make sense, at quarterback, we tend to see the overall ownership much more flat relative to other positions. So just from that case alone, I mean, don't be afraid to keep going back to the well with this guy, and especially when he continues to have arguably the most fantasy friendly role in all of football. I mean, the Bears have been perfect because we actually have the dual threat quarterback putting up points on top of a horrendous defense on the other side of the ball that forces him to keep his gas on, you know, keep his foot on the gas for 60 entire minutes. So talk a little bit too, Nick, about how, hey, it actually could be a not rare game. Again, they've had some passing success in the past few weeks too, but man, I know AJ Terrell is questionable with that hamstring injury, but even before he was out, man, this was already a rough unit. Expectations for Justin Fields this week against the Falcons.
So the fun thing with this is that Fields has really excelled as an intermediate depth passer between 10 and 19 yards down the field. That's also where the Falcons are just getting blowtorched. So they're in that range. They're number 27 in PFF coverage grade. They're this is so bad. They're 25th in yards allowed per coverage snap. 25th in catch rate allowed, and they are the most fantasy friendly team or offensive friendly team in yards allowed per coverage snap on targets between 10 and 19 yards down the field. They're 25th in explosive pass play rate allowed, and their open target rate is 39.5%. That's 19th. And I think that all that is really interesting here with one, Fields' ability to deliver the ball in that area. But what I see matching up very well is the speed of Darnell Mooney and Equanime St. Brown. You know, St. Brown, he's not what his brother is per se, but they are both 88th percentile in the 10-yard split in their 40-yard dashes. And with this open target rate and this propensity for allowing big plays, I think that those guys can have, I think that they can help Justin Fields get to a big time passing day on that in that intermediate area of the field. We don't need to cover in depth how good of a rusher Justin Fields has been. He is insanely elite in this regard. And the Atlanta Falcons front seven is really not very good against the run. They're allowing 1.58 rushing yards before contact. That's fifth most. They have had a 63.2% negatively graded run play rate, which is 11th highest. So I like Fields' ability to just get it done both ways here.
After Justin Fields, moving it right along, we have quite the I don't want to say LVP of fantasy, but Kyle Pitts has not been helping people. But I will say, so things have changed a little bit for Pitts. And I talked about this in my weekly wide receiver cornerback article, where earlier on in the year, it was more of an issue of how he was being used and weren't getting enough volume going his way. But that really has changed. Now, it hasn't been as extraordinary as we would hope. But at the end of the day, Kyle Pitts is the tight end 7 in expected PPR points per game on the season. I mean, he's tight end 21 in real fantasy points per game. As someone that drafted entirely too much Kyle Pitts, I would love if he could be at the tight end 7 at this point. But again, that means his workload has been at the top 8 variety. But yes, he has been, whether you want to call him the worst, I wouldn't. I think it's more of an issue with Mariota and the offense. I'll say most unlucky tight end out there. league high 34.2 fantasy points per game, not per game, overall, below expectation on the season. Only Chris Olave and Deontay Johnson have more unrealized air yards than Kyle Pitts. So the opportunities are there, Nick. We saw him a couple weeks ago with the ball in the open field go for 80 yards and a score. He has the upside. We know what he can do. Can this be the week and a potential shootout with that game total? One of the few, I think it's only Bears, Falcons, and Chiefs, Chargers in the 50s this week. Can we finally get behind Kyle Pitts? Come on.
I think so. I like him a lot as a GPP play. I think you could fire him up in cash too. Among NFL tight ends with 30 NFL tight ends with at least 25 targets, Pitts is number two in targets per route run. He's number seven in yards per route run, number one in average depth of target. What is fun about this matchup is the Chicago Bears linebackers, their interior guys, are both kind of uniquely bad in their own way. So Nicholas Morrow, he's a very good tackler, but he allows a 71% open target rate and... he's the sure tackler, 71% open target rate and an 83.9 catch rate allowed. Now he is good at wrapping guys up once they've secured the pass, but he is really bad at preventing completion. So I think that Kyle Pitts can get the job done there. And Pitts has kind of struggled in the catch rate department. And I think a lot of that is just because, like you said, Mariota, he struggles to get in on target, but Morrow is a guy who's going to give Pitts a lot of room to run. Now, the number two interior linebacker here, Jack Sanborn, is the guy who replaced Roquan Smith. He's just bad all over. He's allowing 2.18 yards per coverage snap. That's 35th among 40 linebackers over the last 2 weeks since he's become a starter. He's got an 87.5 open target rate. So like Sanborn is just out of his element, Donnie. But yeah, I like what Pitts can do against both of these guys. And the way that the Chicago Bears have changed their play calling since week six has, one, opened up their own offense, but two, facilitated a higher pace of play for their opponent. And so I think that ultimately what has been good for Justin Fields is also good for their opponents. The Falcons have a 26.25 point implied team total in this one. I know overs aren't really hitting this year. Theirs is at 49.5, and I think they have a shot at hitting that. So Kyle Pitts, he's always risky, but this one looks good, as they always do, but this one looks good.
They do always look so good. And I appreciate your little shout out to Donnie there. Well done, good sir. All right, before we get to your main event, and your main event is a certain Rams running back as a little spoiler, but I want to talk about CeeDee Lamb, a bit safer of a play. 7,500 on DraftKings just might not be high enough for a guy coming off that 150-yard, 2-touchdown performance, continuing to get to work from the sweet, sweet, friendly confines of the slot. And I think that has been the big change that we've seen this year, you know, missing from the Cowboys offense. That, you know, faltered when it did not need to falter down the stretch last season. When they lost Michael Gallup, what happened? They moved CeeDee Lamb to the outside, and they had Cedric Wilson going from the slot. That's why you would have these annoying games, like in the wild card round, when you look up at the targets and CeeDee Lamb has 5 and Cedric Wilson and Dalton Schultz having far more. So just that, man, just having CeeDee Lamb more so in the slot. They've been willing to use him even in the backfield a time or two. He's getting, you know, schemed up the sort of touches we see. And as we saw last week, one of the latest guys to, you know, just burn Jair Alexander to a crisp at points. So CeeDee Lamb, we've always known the talents there. The usage is also there, and they're doing a good job scheming him. I know Kellen Moore gets a lot of flack, and, you know, we can point to certain decisions made at certain times and, you know, help back up some of those claims. But hey, at least for this year, doing a great job with CD. It's been awesome to see him really start to catch his stride with Dak under center. You like his chances of torching old man Patrick Peterson and backup Duke Shelley there on the outside.
Yeah. So with Duke Shelley, he's their number three, number four cornerback, because they've got Dantzler on injured reserve and then his backup, Caleb Evans, he's out with a concussion. So Shelley did come up and he made a great play at the end of the game last week, but he was, I think, a Chicago Bears cast off from last year, so that's not a great sign. Patrick Peterson, he has been really good. I think that, one, the way Lamb wins, I think that he can kind of succeed against him. But two, I don't think he's really going to have to. The wide receiver cornerback matchup chart projects him for 10 snaps against Patrick Peterson. The really exciting part here is the 19 projected snaps against slot cornerback Chandon Sullivan. So I, for a variety of reasons, I enjoy talking about GPP plays, but I think that Lamb is justifiably the chalk wide receiver play this week. The PFF projects have him, I think, at like 25.7% rostership rate. That is going to be really high. And it also might be hard to keep up with other teams in the field if you don't have him. But across the board, CD is basically a top six slot receiver in the NFL. He's number four in PFF. Receiving grade, he is number six in targets per out run, number three in yards per out run. The list goes on. He's number one in explosive pass plays generated, and that's super exciting. He has 16 of them in the slot. He leads all NFL slot receivers by a margin of three explosive pass plays. Shannon Sullivan, conversely, 4.1% explosive pass play rate allowed. That's 26th in the NFL. With number one being good. He is 28th in PFF slot coverage grade, 88.4% catch rate allowed. That's number 28.
CD's going to torch him. He's going to freaking torch him.
It looks like CD is going to torch him. I think that sometimes the chalk plays can be a little bit risky, but this one looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
If you guys do want to compliment a chalk player or two with some more lower owned guys, I do have five wide receivers that I am looking to really feature in a lot of my tournament lineups. Tyler Boyd sitting there, a little bit overpriced, you might argue, and because of that, could come in under 5% ownership against the Steelers defense. That's that problem with slot receivers for years, and specifically Boyd has scored in two of his last three against them. Also, anytime touchdown odds at plus 175, not looking too shabby. Chris Olave just had his second finish outside the top 24 since week two. Not expecting him to catch that Jalen Ramsey shadow. He has only been assigned to DeAndre Hopkins on the season. And with that, we have a decent enough matchup against a Rams defense that gets a lot of respect, but and for good reason. They have Donald and they have Ramsey, but they aren't this invincible juggernaut. This is still a defense that's allowed, you know, the eighth most PPR points per game to opposing wide receivers this season. Might actually be 10th, but my point is, you know, this can be a winnable matchup for Olave, who has, again, one of the more fantasy-friendly workloads in the league. Amari Cooper, also someone that, what, we're fading in a shootout in a dome because of these arbitrary home-away splits that apparently have only impacted Amari Cooper and no other NFL player in the history of the league. Like, look, man, I asked Kevin Cole, who I enjoy talking to every Wednesday and Thursday here on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Kevin, much smarter person than myself about some of this stuff, just in terms of his ability to run regressions and models and stuff that I usually just put into Excel and move on to the next thing. I asked Kevin, is there any truth, anything to the idea that Cooper could just be like a significantly worse player on the road? No, it's noise, okay? Even 17-game seasons are such a small sample compared to any other sport. So I'm balking at the home-away splits. Amari Cooper against the Bills secondary that's still banged up, still not getting Tre'Davious White back. Don't be afraid to go the well with Cooper or even Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's affordable enough in his own right. Final points, Paris Campbell as a pivot off of Nico Collins. I do like that call. Again, three straight top 12 finishes. And as Nick brought up earlier, with Matt Ryan under center, three straight. And as Nick brought up before, getting that sweet, sweet matchup from the friendly confines of the slot. And then finally, I want these Pittsburgh wide receivers, man. It's going to happen. It has to happen at some point, Nick. Deontay Johnson, league high, 80 freaking one targets without a touchdown. And George Pickens, like, look, I understand that he's not going to rush for a touchdown every week, but with Chase Claypool out of the picture, we actually are seeing him now get those spare handoffs that they like giving to their wide receivers. And the biggest thing for me is we look at this Bengals team, and they've actually been pretty good on defense this year. I mean, in the passing game, have yet to give up 300 yards in a game. They're like top 10 in PPR points per game, allowed the wide receivers and whatnot. I think it's a little bit flawed, man. You start looking at their actual schedule. Here are the quarterbacks that the Bengals have had the pleasure of facing this year. Mitch Trubisky, Cooper Rush, Joe Flacco, Tua for like a quarter, and then Teddy Bridgewater the rest of the game. Lamar Jackson, okay, yeah, that's tough. After that, Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, Jacoby Brissett, and PJ Walker / Baker Mayfield. So yeah, you know, you can only do what you're going to do against the competition that's placed in front of you, but you take away Chidobe Awuzie, who's done a pretty good job against Deontay Johnson over the years, and maybe just maybe we see Kenny Pickett start playing a little bit like a first round pick and we get some finally fireworks going in this offense. So Deontay, Pickens, even some Pat Freiermuth, definitely some GPP options I'm looking for in the passing game. And with that, Nick, our main event, tell everyone why, if you can keep your streak going here, Jeff Wilson 2 weeks ago, Darius Slayton last week, and now Kyren Williams, Rams running back. What's going on with Kyren?
So remind me, I spaced on sharing my over-unders, my
props. Okay, we'll get to them.
Yeah, we'll get back to those. But so Kyren Williams, all right, he is a GPP only play. Don't put him in a cash lineup, and I think you need to be in a pretty rough spot to think of him in a redraft format. I probably will start him in a redraft league though. The Los Angeles Rams are 3-point road underdogs against the New Orleans Saints. So I think the game script will lean a little bit pass heavy. Last week, Kyren, he did not put up gaudy results in the box score, but his usage data was really promising. In his first NFL game, he outsnapped Darrell Henderson 11-9 on passing downs and 4-2 in goal to go situations. He was more efficient as a rusher, although he only had one carry. He took it for 9 yards. What is really exciting with this, though, is among 39 NFL running backs with 10 receiving snaps in week 10, Williams 30% targets per out run rate and 3.00 yards per out run rate were second only to Jerick McKinnon on the week. His targets per out run rate was fifth and the yards per out run was trailed only Jerick McKinnon at 3.11. Those are sizable targets per. I mean, we want like our number one receivers at these kinds of levels. And again, the workload, it's a small sample size, but that was an extremely promising debut as a junior at the University of Notre Dame. Last year, he produced an 18.4 targets per out run rate that was tied for 14th among all NCAA running backs and 1.47 yards per out run rate that was sixth. So he has a good pass catching profile, and it was good to see him continue that in his first NFL game. Now, there are some injuries at play here. Cooper Kupp is obviously out. I don't think that Williams can just become Cooper Kupp's replacement, but they both work in the short area of the field. And Matthew Stafford, with some injuries on the offensive line, is going to be looking for an outlet pass with Cooper Kupp off the field. Williams maybe could steal a little bit of that. As it pertains to injuries on the New Orleans side of things, they are very likely to be with. Actually, I think we got a ruling on at least one of these guys, but Pete Warner was all three linebacker. Pete Warner was 2 DNPs Wednesday and Thursday with an ankle injury. Marcus Davenport was 2 DNPs with a calf injury.
Hold on, I got it. Pete Warner is ruled out. Cameron Jordan is ruled out, and Marcus Davenport ruled out. 3 for 3.
Yeah. So we have three front seven starters who are going to be out this week. And these are not guys who had big like extended injury absences that have been already influencing New Orleans run defense data. These are regular starters who were just out this week. That's significant. New Orleans 57.6 PFF run defense grade is middle of the NFL. It's 18th in the NFL. They have a long list of missed tackles, 49 of them so far. That's eighth most in the NFL. And they are allowing a 64% touchdown conversion rate inside the five. That's third highest in the league. So if this data holds, this usage data holds, I mean, it would be great if it increased, but if it just holds and he continues to lead passing down snaps and lead on goal to goal touches, the table is set for Williams to just have a great game out of nowhere. Again, he is a GPP play, but you know, we're looking for home run hits, and he identifies in that regard.
So I think the one, especially when you hit Jeff Wilson a couple of weeks ago, the play here with Kyren is hopefully getting ahead of the really encouraging usage. If we see him go on and like take control of this backfield or just be the clear cut pass down back, we're on it this week. Whereas if we see it this week, then next week he's going to be the tournament play that everyone is talking about, potentially taking the step forward. My concern would be that a lot of those numbers could be skewed by the fact that he only had 5 snaps in the first 10 drives, and they basically threw him out there for the entirety of the final drive. That said, he really made the most out of all of his touches on that drive. And you can say it was mop up and the defense wasn't trying as hard and all that, but my God, Cam Akers is dead last in the NFL in yards per touch. Daryl Henderson, I think, has generally been good. I think he's probably over the past 2 years consistently been the Rams' best running back, and Sean McVay still will not give the guy any sort of benefit of the doubt when it comes to actually trying to give Henderson the full feature workload we've seen here. So, hey, man. Nick, it's one of those things where I agree with you. Don't do it in redraft. Don't do it. God, don't do it in cash. But man, in a full PPR site like DraftKings, I mean, where else is the ball going to go in this Rams offense? Yeah. I really like, is Sean McVay going to dial up everything for Henderson? No. Akers? No. Tyler Higbee? I doubt it, but maybe we're looking up and we see Kyren Williams have those 8 to 10 targets. So, okay, man, we'll see. I like the call. I've always wanted, like, Nick, if I ever get canceled and just have to go off my own thing, like, I'm doing a Galaxy Brain DFS podcast where we just smoke a ton of weed and, you know, don't even have to, like, actually worry about it at that point. But for now, I'll keep my, you know, corporate hat on and continue to try to be a good guy. But no, I mean, I'm not sure what you do in your off time when you're trying to come up with some of these, but, you know, Galaxy Brain move by you, my friend, and I'm talking myself into it the more I get going. So maybe, just maybe, we have one source of life in the fantasy sphere over here with the Rams. Let us know what prop bets you got real quick before we get out of here.
Yeah. Darnell Mooney over 45 and a half receiving yards. Kyle Pitts over 37 and a half receiving yards. Justin Fields over half of a passing touchdown. And then three CeeDee Lamb ones over 5.5 receptions, over 75 and a half receiving yards, and any time plus 110 anytime touchdown scorer.
What are the odds on over a half passing touchdown for Fields? And what was the juice?
I can find.
Was out. It close to even minus 115?
I think that it was close, but wow. I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't want to lead you guys astray.
You're good. I mean, against that Falcons secondary, I would have thought they'd given him like at least like one, you know, set it at one and kind of live with that. 0.5. Yeah.
This is my bad. It's minus 285. So it is not close.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's not awful, but you'd have to like parlay it.
That said, six straight games with a passing touchdown for Justin Fields. Great day to be great. Oh, look at Mogul, you know, giving me a chance to actually bring up something he brought up instead of seeming like an egotistical whatever guy. But yeah, guys, there is a lot of stuff going on with Twitter. I really don't pay attention to exactly all this. You know, when I get done for the day, I usually just watch like MMA videos and, you know, do whatever and bug Nick about, you know, how he comes to these great DFS picks and whatnot. But yes, if there is something crazy going on with Twitter, I mean, I still want somewhere to go barking to everyone and just being a little bit of an idiot from time to time and having fun. And as much as nothing would change with the podcast, with my articles on pff.com, I am going to go ahead and start a newsletter where maybe at some point it's just things that I would have tweeted, but now we can't tweet. So I do tend to think that Twitter is going to live, but you know what? I've been meaning to do this anyway. Want to try to branch off in some other directions. And yeah, if you guys like some fantasy football rambling, some other stuff, and you know, just general goodness, I am going to start trying to get this newsletter going. Great day to be great. It's pinned up on my Twitter account at iHeartIts. Check it out. Subscribe if you're into it, and God forbid, you know, one day we open up Twitter and it disappears. That's where you can find me. But again, the podcast is going nowhere, and we still will have other stuff going on as well. So I'm not too worried. Last night was a pretty entertaining in the old Twitter sphere with everyone freaking out with it. We had my guy Danny Kelly over at the Ringer, you know, retweeting all of his favorite jokes from over the years. So just one of those things, but trying to stay ahead. And as wild as that would be, you know, if it just gets wiped off the earth, we'll see what happens, Nick, but what a world, what a time to be alive, some might say. But you know what? Let's just focus on week 11 as the big takeaway here. Go get those dubs. Go get us ready and set for hopefully a fantasy championship chase. Nick, let the folks know what you got going on over at pff.com, as well as another of a number of other places over the fantasy industry.
Yeah, we've got the wide receiver cornerback matchups to target and avoid. It comes out on Fridays. The DFS cheat sheet, top five recommended plays, which we just covered, comes out on Saturdays. I've got weekly recaps on Monday mornings at the 33rd team. Starts and sits for all positions at 4 for 4, rankings at Nerdball, as well as my podcast on the Nerdball Fantasy Football podcast feed. I think that's it, at Nick Botiford NFL on Twitter.
great day to be great. Give Nick a follow. And yeah, guys, just have a good weekend. How about that? You know, week 11 here. We got Ohio State, Michigan coming up next Saturday. I am absolutely terrified. Can't be overlooking Maryland and their shitty ass crab cakes, though, in the meantime. I didn't mean it. I think crab cakes are good, but seriously, you are freaking dead, Maryland. And with that, we're going to get going. For Nick, I'm Ian. Thank you as always for tuning in to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Until next time, take care, everybody.